James Smith.
Oh, right. Cause sharing there, Tom. Lovely. Right, I've got a clicker. Hello, everybody. Welcome, and thank you for coming. And I'm James Smith, as Tom said. You can get me at Floppy on Twitter. And I'm a developer. I'm acting head of R&D at the Open Data Institute. But I'm not talking on their behalf today. I'm also a parent. I've got two young girls. And I'm an activist. I enjoy using technology to make a better world. 2 years ago, in that room, I spoke about an organisation that I help organise called CleanWeb UK, which is all about doing using the web for sustainability to solve the big climate change problems that we have. And when you look at those big problems, you hit really big blockers. And the blockers get bigger and bigger, and eventually you hit a machine that doesn't work. There we go, let's turn it on. Is that right? It's working now. Eventually you hit politics. I hate politics. Everybody hates politics, and politicians. This is an actual painting that Michael Howard had done, and it hangs in Portcullis House, and it's the most creepiest thing I've ever seen. Went for the launch of the Digital Democracy Commission. It was just like, oh my God. Anyway, we spend a lot of time moaning about politics on Twitter. It's not particularly satisfying. And you realise, when looking at these big problems, that our political systems and the people in them are really big, huge blockers. On the other hand, I'm a developer. I love open source. I love openness in all its forms. And I love collaboration, love sharing ideas, and I love GitHub. If only there was some way we could fix one using the other one. mid-2013, I got tired of just complaining and suggested that all of us who were complaining about things on Twitter should start writing an open source manifesto to say how we really wanted the world to be. And I refused to do this because I had too many things to do already. Unfortunately, somebody else then went and made the repository, and then I filled it with stuff. Fast forward about a year, and we've got 8,000 words of policy across loads and loads of different areas. All these ones. It really annoys me that it's not multiple of three, and there's an empty thing in the corner, from around 25 different people. And it's done like you would imagine an open source system to be run. You know, anyone can submit pull requests. Absolutely anyone can go edit, change. It goes into the queue. One of our major contributors just walked in. Then it gets voted on by people who've already contributed to the project, as if it was a software project. Existing maintainers decide what goes in. But then as soon as you've added something, you get a vote. So it's open to everyone. And we arrived at a bunch of key ideas, you know, openness, transparency, better democracy, liquid democracy in some form, building a system for the 21st century, not for the previous century, taking on those big problems, evidence-based. And technology-enabled, but with a strong social conscience and progressive ideals, not this Silicon Valley tech libertarianism that wants to opt out and go and live on a man-made island in the middle of the sea. And there's a really good book that I'd recommend to people read. It's a guy called Steve Johnson wrote a book called Future Perfect, and he identified this movement as, I think, called peer progressive. Not right or left, but forward. And it really spoke to me. I think I had the microphone too close. Is that still okay? Can people still hear? And then I got really annoyed at politics again at the EU elections in 2014. And I just thought, oh, we can do so much better. I think the future will be amazing. I don't think we should be scared of it. I think we embrace the future and move forward. So I did something a bit stupid. I decided I was going to stand on this manifesto that we built in an open source way. I thought about it carefully. I spoke to my wife, convinced her, or at least, you know, she despaired sufficiently that I went ahead anyway. I wrote a blog post and I thought very carefully about when I would release it and how, and I thought very carefully about it for 10 whole minutes before the itch made me just go, oh, bugger it, and put it up online. I decided I was going to do this openly all the way. I was going to write about everything, blog, write, show that it's accessible to people. One thing I didn't check was whether it was legal for me to do that. But, you know, we checked that afterwards, because it is the engineering way. Afterwards, I spoke to the Electoral Commission, who on phone and in their guidance on website, really helpful, really good. And yes, it's fine. You know, you can say whatever the hell you like. So that's okay. And then started looking at actually whether it was going to be feasible. Started looking at things like how much money would I need to do this. This is the spending from the cabinet, the constituency where I live in 2010. Correlates very much to number of votes achieved, apart from a couple of outliers. Apparently there's a laser pointer, but it's not it. But, you know, the spending limits are like £32,000 in total, something like that, but nobody's spending anywhere near that. The Conservatives about 11,000. But it seemed to me you could do it for about 5,000, and that seemed, you know, within the limits, and I could do better than those not bothering. The Green Party didn't spend anything last time, which means they didn't bother to tell anyone about anything. So I thought I could do better than that. I'm looking into it. It turns out you get a free delivery from the Royal Mail. You get a free leaflet, not free leaflet, a free delivery of a leaflet. And looked around and thought, and got a couple of quotes, and like, for £1,500, I could print enough leaflets to get one through every door. That's totally doable. And that's that, and the deposit, which is £500, that's all I need. I can do this. And so, yeah, carried on. I'd initially announced as an independent, and I don't think independents work in the current system. I think you need a party, I think you need brand recognition, it's really important. And you need to be able to build a movement. And we have to start from where we are. I do think politics should be more open to independents. We shouldn't have the big party blocks we have now. But we're starting from where we are. So let's start from where we are. So we formed a party. This is it. Something new. Somethingnew.org.uk. We have some new on Twitter. And that party adopted the manifesto. The manifesto is still an independent project. So not everybody who contributes to the manifesto is necessarily involved in something new. There's a big overlap. But it was because one came before the other, we kind of stuck with that. And we adopted a sort of core set of values that we should be optimistic about the future, that we should be open, democratic, you know, more democratic than the system is now. Democracy is not finished. We can do it better. Rational, courageous, able to take big decisions, not based on headlines in tomorrow's Daily Mail. Ethical, internationalist. I mean, you know, who here particularly cares about national borders? They're getting less relevant. Well, but they're becoming less relevant as time goes on. I can apply to be an e-citizen of Estonia now. What does that mean in 20 years' time? And that people should be free, that you should have a right to privacy, and that everyone should be treated equally before the law. So, you know, just a sort of core set of values, and then the detail was in the manifesto. So once we've done that, I'll come back to the actual formation of the party. We applied to form the party. It didn't happen for the next 6 months, but that's a much longer story, which I don't have time for. Needless to say, there was lots of swearing. But we need to get down to campaigning. 7 months before the election, but that will go quick. First thing as I did is I bought a map. And I wanted to know, where am I? What's going on? What is my constituency? I live in a town called Horsham. Anybody know where Horsham is? Amazing. No, that's about right. So that blog down there, that's Brighton. That up there, that's Gatwick. And London is somewhere up in my daughter's bedroom upstairs. Not there. That's at my house. Anyway, you know what I mean? And this is Horsham, and it's all countryside. There's about 77,000 voters. And that means I need about 3,000 votes to get back my deposit. I am going into this with my eyes wide open. That is not going to happen. That deposit I will never see again. But that's fine. And one of the things I was really excited about was to see that we had this sort of little blob over the side there, which we got in the last set of boundary changes. And in there is a village called Bolcombe. Anybody know about Bolcombe? See, more people have heard of Bolcombe than Horsham. Quite reasonably so. They did an amazing thing. They were objecting to the fracking that was going on in their village, but then they decided they didn't want it, but they decided they did want a solar plant instead. And that's the kind of optimism and forward-looking that really spoke to what we were trying to do. So I was so happy to see that they were there. We decided to start podcasting. We have a podcast, soundcloud.com/openrevolution. It's done by a mate of mine that I went to school with, and he decided he wanted to interview me through the campaign. So we did a bunch of 20-minute long podcasts looking at different aspects of the manifesto, talking about things. It was really, really good practice, if nothing else. We're still doing it. not so often, but it's still going. And we also decided we were going to publish all of our finances openly, completely, 100%, fully transparent. This is, all our finances are proper open data. It's either ODBL or CC BY, and I can't remember which one, because it was months ago. But it's all open, spending and donations. We designed the schema with a guy called Ian McGill from an organisation called Spend Network. They do a lot of public spending information analysis, and they're a startup in the ODI, and I said to him, what would be the ideal schema you would want a political party to publish with? And he went, well, I want all these things. So that's what we did. And we've written it. And anybody could use that. They don't, but they could. And all these things are CSVs in a GitHub repository, rendered into nice, readable HTML with Jekyll. Not exactly hard for, it doesn't involve some huge IT infrastructure, is what I mean. And it actually has an open data certificate as well, which is nice, so it is properly open data. So then I thought, let's go meet some people. Let's go meet the people. We'll go out, we'll do town hall meetings. I've booked a load of rooms and thought, right, one a week, every ward around the constituency will go, we'll meet people. I got the numbers from the ONS, ordered the wards by size, by number of voters. We thought we'll start with the smallest, we'll go to the biggest, and then if we've got more time, we'll go around a few again. This is what you imagine. This is what happens. Getting the message out about these things is really hard. And I sat in a number of meeting rooms on my own a few times. And then I started moving them to pubs, so at least I could have a drink. And I didn't have to pay. But getting the message out is really hard. You know, for one person on their own, even just booking 18 meeting rooms for 6 months in advance is a pain. So I wouldn't necessarily do that quite the same again. I'd love to have the kind of town hall meeting thing that they have in the US. We don't have it here, and you can't just make it happen. Next thing I found interesting through the election campaign was 38 degrees. This is not 38 degrees, this is 3 degrees. But there weren't any good pictures of 38 degrees. So, and I made a spelling mistake. In January, emails start coming in, and you start getting a whole bunch of emails. So, oh, somebody's emailed me about this thing. Oh, somebody else has emailed me about this. Oh my God, somebody else has emailed me about this thing. We're using a system called Nation Builder, which handles all those emails and creates people in them, use it for contact lists, mail outs, and so on. The emails are all, I think 38 degrees want them to look like they come from real people. Nobody thinks they come from, well, they do come from real people, but nobody thinks they've all been written by hand. 2 minutes, oh my God. Right, anyway, we wrote some scripts to handle them with magic. That's, I'm going to move on. To work out where people were, pass the addresses and things. It'd be great if 38 degrees wrote some actual tools for people to be able to handle this stuff. Because as a candidate, you get a whole load of questions. Loads of questions. So many questions. Campaigns, pledges, emails with 20 questions in, each wanting a paragraph of response. I would never, ever respond to an email like that normally. The best thing here was Democracy Club. They made this by Democracy Club and 89UP. And it was a nice little website that a whole bunch of different organisations would each put their questions in, and you could go and answer them all in one go. It was amazing. They sent you a special link. It made my life so much easier. It was easily the best experience for a candidate in that kind of thing. But it's just grind, day after day after day. Emails backing up all the time. Everything else in your life getting dropped. No time to stop. Everything happens in a day, so it's a real denial of service attack on your actual job. And I was doing this mostly alone. We had volunteers around, but organising them was another time sink that was just really hard to do. Bootstrapping is really hard. There's a great book called Swarmwise by Rick Falkringer, who founded the Swedish Pirate Party. And he's got this amazing set of instructions on how to manage your swarm of people who have responded when you've put something up on one forum and 100,000 people emailed in response. That's really good if you have those people and they're ready to do it. Luck plays a very big part in that. But eventually we get to March, we get to hustings. Hustings are fun. There were a few. One was run by the CPRE, one by local churches, and one by a humanist group. And we all sat up the front, 8 candidates in our area. This is the Conservative. He's now obviously the winner. No spoilers there. To be honest though, I thought they'd all be better. I'm an engineer. I'm not that used to talking to people in public, in rooms of 200 people, but I was quite a lot better than the rest of them, I have to say. Well, not the rest of them. The Tory and the Labour guy, they were both good at speaking. But one important thing was not being afraid to piss people off. I had no illusions of whether I was going to win. I didn't have to please everyone. I didn't have to make sure I didn't look stupid. So I could just stand up and say what I wanted, which was really good fun. It meant I didn't have to listen to the rest of the campaign that you lot did. That must have been a nightmare. I just ignored it. Right. We were in the national TV leaders' debates via a laptop and YouTube. Who cares who gets to be on television? Let's record it, splice in our announcers, and step them up online. So we did that in the night, before midnight. We raised 1,600 quid, which meant we covered leaflets and deposit, and then nominations went in. Calling people up, getting 10 people to sign your forms, pretty easy. But yeah, then we leafleted, evolution of leaflets here. I have to give a shout to Fee, who's sitting over there, who, when we were had about 6 hours left before the deadline where I had to get his stuff in for approval, she did all the design in about 3 hours on a Sunday night, saved bacon. And then you get more printed and you get an entire pallet of leaflets. I've never had a pallet of leaflets before. We stood in two constituencies, that's my one, so that's the other one. And we got 100,000 leaflets. There are 50,000 copies of my own face. Nobody should have that many. You stick them all up in the car, you take them to the Royal Mail, and you have a few left to hand out in the street. It's just weird. And lots of other weird things start happening. Oh, I saw you at last things, you were very convincing. Oh yes, I'm going to vote for you. What? I'm in the paper. What's going on there? People start putting posters on their windows. People send me a picture with an X in a box next to my name. That's not normal.
That's not legal.
That is true. Anyway, then eventually you get to the count. And you can't take photos at the count, that's definitely not legal. You stay up all night, and then you discover you got a grand total of 375 votes. Which actually, I was pretty pleased with. This is a list of all the sort of direct democracy type candidates who were standing, and we came up the top, which, yay, with not many people and not much time, I'm really, really happy with. We spent about £2,000, and the official spending, because they don't include some stuff, makes it look like I made a £400 profit. Yeah. No, I didn't. We did our own spending report, which actually explains everything that we did spend. I'm just ignoring the time. I'm nearly done. 3 slides. What do we do next? That's the thing. What happens next? This is what we need to do next. We need to join up. We need all those people who stood on a similar kind of idea. We need to work together. We need a movement. Digital democracy is coming. Democracy is changing. It has to change for the 21st century. It cannot continue as it is. We have to work together. And we have to change our democracy from this. We have the politics of the Industrial Revolution to what is the politics of this. What is the politics of the network? How does it look in 50 years' time? Because if it looks like it does now, we will have missed an enormous opportunity. So that's what's next. Small, achievable goals.
Thank you. Time for maybe one or two quick questions before that.
You're about to Voltron.
Or you can hold them.
There is another session after, so.
Really quick question. Would you do it again?
Yes. We have to do it again.
Well, that was so quick, we might even have two questions.
You shared details of other independent candidates,
yes,
there, and yeah, how many votes they got. Where did you find that data? Where's that?
The next morning, trawling BBC website, Democracy Club. Right. Democracy Club. Wikipedia, things like that. I found Wikipedia is the only place that actually lists the total number of votes in each one, so you can work out the share. Things like that. So there's a lot of, yeah. While the adrenaline was still going. Right.
Are you taking questions about the manifesto process, or do you just want to talk about the standing? So the manifesto, how do you prevent it being, let's do this, and this, and this, and this, and then someone says that'll cost too much, and let's have a balanced budget. Job done.
I see you've read it. we're at the really early stage. It's about ideas. It's about what we would like, how we would like the world to be. Yeah, what I'd really love to see is, as this evolves, is people doing... Why can't I look at the modelling that the Treasury do? Why isn't that open source? Why can't we have open source economic models that are actually behind this stuff? That's what I'd really like. Need somebody else to do that, though. I don't know.
I think time-wise, we're going to move on to the next one. There might be a bit at the end. And there's a whole extra session after this where you can just, I don't know, you can do whatever you want.
So. Pretty much.
Thanks a lot, James. I think it's really interesting we've come one after the other because me and James are tackling the same sort of problem space from kind of opposite directions. So what Democracy Club is, we've got a family of products that are independent. They're not political, unlike James. They're completely neutral. And we're trying to improve the democratic process. So James said lots of things about it's really hard to know, like how to stand or get people to go to hustings or figure out who the other candidates are or answer questions. It's that kind of process level stuff that we're trying to solve, not who you vote for, not the politics. We start small, so rather than take some really exciting option, there's loads of exciting stuff around, like online voting or fluid democracy or like the way of blockchains or whatever. Rather than doing that, we're going to say, let's take what we've got right now, make tiny improvements, and it'll get a bit better. We've got a really long way to go before we're ready for like super exciting new stuff, so let's make it better right now. Democracy Club, I didn't start. It started in 2010 with a collection of volunteers doing things. At the end of 2010, it sort of fell by the wayside as you know, people get really excited before elections and then they get less excited after the election. About a year and a half, 2 years ago now, I started thinking, I got really depressed about the fact that there was going to be another election and I felt quite powerless about it. Probably the same time that James was starting his party, I was thinking, well, we need some kind of good things to help me with this. So I started rebooting it, and we took a slightly different tack of last time, but I'll get into that a bit later. So, as it says here, in 2010, one of the main things that was done is a list of candidates. It's quite hard to believe that there's no list of people standing for election before an election. In a kind of single place, which is a bit strange to think about. So one of the things the 2010 Democracy Club did was that we realised we had to do at least that this time round. That's the bare minimum you need for an election to happen, for any election to happen. Does that work? Yeah. Okay, so about elections. There's no single organisation that runs elections. It's a mixture of Parliament, local councils, the Electoral Commission. There's no single owner of this stuff. There's PDFs everywhere. Everyone puts a PDF out about something. The Electoral Commission, I mirrored their site, and there's thousands of PDFs on there that I tried to look for information. It's really difficult. But that's not the problem. There's 450 councils who are all publishing different things all the time. So on candidates, if you currently want to find a candidate, you can Google for them. And I Googled before our website was made, to kind of find out who might be standing. This was sort of probably January time before there was loads of stuff there. I got a Guardian website, which was from 2010, and they said this information is frozen. That was the top result, was saying 4.5 years ago these are the people that stood, but we're not going to do anything about this anymore. And then the second result was Wikipedia, which was better, but... what even is that? No, see, PGP, it's great. It's better, but it's out of date. I mean, it wasn't correct, and it's still, like, it's a list of names. You can see Amelia Womack there had a link to her page, but Harry Harman, but no one else. There's not much there for me to figure out, like, how am I going to decide who I want to vote for? It doesn't really give me a lot to go on. So why even would you want to do this? So James said again that back in February sometime, maybe before that, he was getting emails as a candidate of the public saying, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? These are things that are really important to me. There is some official data that's launched by councils, but it's only 3 weeks before, about 3 weeks before the election is actually on, and that's kind of too late for you to influence, to have a conversation with people about what you think you know, how you think the country should be run, or anything. It's 3 weeks to do that when everyone's really busy and they don't get any sleep because they're campaigning and stuff. Not the right kind of thing. If we started it back in January or something, there might be some kind of way of having a decent conversation with people about that. So campaign groups want this to kind of do lobbying, basically, but also the public can make use of it, and you can imagine journalists make use of it. Just look at how many stories there were about candidates standing down before they'd actually been officially announced as candidates. Like, there's quite important stories that happened. So what we did, we started, basically we decided that we needed to crowdsource this data. Parties released the data, some newspapers released the data, some people self-declare about things. So we started gathering these things together. Sometimes it's wrong, sometimes it's not, but a wrong list is a lot more useful than a right list, because at the time then that, you know, we can then start saying we know this is a person who self-declares as standing, this is their Twitter information, this is their Facebook information, this is their homepage, you can start to get some background on what they're doing. And if it turns out they're not really standing, it doesn't really matter, because at least by the time you get close to election, you've got a really good list of that stuff. You can see this is a like league table here. Andy Lowell's at the top with a massively higher number of Reddits than anyone else. That's mainly because we had an API that allowed you to make edits to our data set, and he just was writing Python scripts that was doing things like importing Wikipedia and trying to cross-reference things and making edits and scraping Twitter for all the things, you know, for people who self-identify as candidates and adding them against who we thought they were. So there was loads of kind of tech ways of crowdsourcing. It wasn't just manually copying and pasting stuff. This is what it looks like at one point. We changed it quite a few times. It's basically just put in your postcode, go to your page. This is what a page looked like. This is quite a nice page because we've got all the photos and the party logos, so it's kind of quite engaging. We only had photos for some of them because, again, they were crowdsourced. You can see there's quite a lot of information here. We're presenting people with their email and Twitter account. We had I don't know what the final result was, but it was probably, I think, over 80% of email addresses for the candidates, probably a bit higher than 80. Twitter accounts, et cetera, et cetera. So you can really imagine, if this was your constituency, you could start to kind of engage with these candidates directly. If you go and follow them all on Twitter, which I know we're going to hear about in a bit. It was crowdsourced, and we kept a public ledger of all the changes. And every change that we had needed to have a source behind it. So you can see here's a ITV.com. I don't know if you can read it, but it's an ITV news article saying that this person's been selected in this constituency. And we can see here that the person who added it wasn't really in the lead table. It was just kind of a random person who just joined up. I think. I mean, apologies if you're here, but you know we don't really know who this person is. Who just saw this on the thing, came to the edit. But there's a publicly viewable list of why they made that edit, why they made that change. They had to justify it. And we were quite good at going through all the changes and making sure they weren't just spamming and all that stuff. So about 3 weeks before the election, this is what happened. So we had this website running from about November, I guess, getting progressively better over time. 3 weeks before the election, this happens, though. My council publishes this. It's quite hard to see, but it's a PDF on their website. If any of you have worked with council websites before, you know probably it's quite hard to find. It's a table. This column is the person's name. This is their address. This column is a description of the political party that they're standing for. It's not necessarily the name of the political party. It's a description. The descriptions have to be registered with the Electoral Commission. They normally say something about the thing, but you know, some of them are fairly generic. You know, putting citizens first or something. I mean, that's quite good. Actually,
that's good.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's not. It doesn't say that this is for this party. This is another example. This one doesn't even have that description. It just has the names and addresses of some people. I don't know why this is useful to anybody. It's just some people's names. This is a great one if we're going to talk open data and accessibility of data. Again, it's quite hard to see on this projector, but this is actually a scan of a printed Word document. There's like artifacts of the scan on here, and again, it's a list of names, but it's an image of a printed bit of paper. So that's not very good. Anyway, so back to our website. We had a load of people use our website. We had 4.4 million, it says users, but it's kind of page views, so we don't know how many users. It's sort of about 170,000-ish users by election day. We launched our data as open data, so we had lots of people reusing it, lots of really big organisations, most of the national newspapers, lots of campaigns. Again, James said 38 degrees. The reason James got an email from 38 degrees is because he had a record, he probably added himself, in our database that allowed him to get spammed.
I loved it.
We publish this as a CSV snapshot every 15 minutes. Another really interesting thing about this, the underlying crowdsourcing engine of this was a platform that my society have built called Poppet. That's storing data in a format that's a standardized way of storing people against organizations and all of the weird edge cases that that has. People change names, they have different names, they're known by different things legally and different things. They change their organizations, all that kind of stuff. The most exciting reuser of this was Google, I think. They worked with us and built our data into Google Search. So people could go and search for who are my candidates, and they'd give you a little widget, this little widget, where you could type in your postcode or your place name, based on their geolocation stuff. And it would tell you this. They had it built into the widget themselves, and then that would link through in turn to a search for that candidate, but you could really easily just straight away in Google Search go and do this.
Where does that edit link go?
Which edit link? Oh, that one. Oh, that's edit your location in the widget, not edit the data, unfortunately. But we had an edit link on our website. I mean, when you got to our website. But yeah, it would have been cool if they'd linked to, like, this is wrong, change it. But Google, no, I don't know, they want to not really present things as wrong on their search. Right, so this is quite. We did a lot of stuff. Your XMP was one of our projects. It was the underlying project that was a prerequisite for everything else to happen, basically. So I'm going to quickly go through these, but I could really give a whole talk on each one of these projects because they're quite complicated. Directory of hustings. There are these public meetings going before elections that you can go to. You can really engage with your candidates. You can shout at them, or if you're a floating voter, you can genuinely find out who to vote for.
My constituency had zero hustings. How common is that?
Well, so what we did is we got to crowdsource hustings, and there are organisational groups that, like again, James said, the church groups often do these things. We worked with some of them for them to add all the hustings to our website, but when you're crowdsourcing, you can't tell, false negatives.
How many in the database had?
I don't know off the top of my head. We had a lot of coverage, but it was often like one event when we know there are actually loads more events. Often people went to one event and then the candidates were saying, I'll see you once a week for the next like 3 weeks because there's a hustings all this. The ones I went to, I've got a good story actually. I added the hustings. I tweeted one of my candidates and said, are you going to a hustings? And she said, yes, this one. So I added it to our website. When I got to the hustings, there were about 30 more people than I expected being there because the housing association found the record on the website. Decided to send the whole housing association. I said, standing room only in the thing. But most excitingly, there was a candidate showed up who had not been invited to the hustings, found it on the website, and just turned up at the table anyway and sat down and went, well, I'm... That's right. Anyway, another quite exciting project was that Frances Irving made was a project that allowed you to nag your candidate to upload their CV as if they were applying for a job. Because they kind of are, if you want to frame it that way. There's complications around that. It's not the same as a normal job, but it's kind of interesting. And we're working from a point of view where we know, if you remember back to The Guardian or Wikipedia, or even the official data, we have a list of names. We don't have anything else. So if you want to know a little bit about the people you might vote for, maybe their CV is like, that's eating into the territory that we want to get into, right? It's not the full information we want. It's a little bit more than the state provides. Election mentions was really exciting. Tim Green here made this, and it was, I said we had sources for all of the edits. They were normally news articles. You can go and scrape those and then do some like clever kind of magic-y like natural language processing on those things to try and figure out when there's a quote from a candidate or when they're talking about a candidate, when a newspaper article is talking about a candidate or a constituency. And you can group all of those blocks of text together and say, show me everything mentioned in my constituency in the news, or show me everything mentioned in this candidate in the news, or show me all of the things that this candidate has said on their page, which is what we did. We integrated it in the end with yournextmp.com. And election leaflets is different to all the others slightly. It's 44% of campaign spending is on election leaflets. But what happens to them is they go from the party headquarters or James's front room or whatever to everyone's doors, and then normally straight to the bin, and maybe you read it on the way past. But there's no oversight. There's no one knows what's being said in those things. They go straight to the people, and it's impossible for the press to kind of look at what's happening about these things. So election leaflets gets people to take a snapshot of their leaflet before they throw it in the bin or read it, and upload it to our website and put it against our postcode, so we can have a picture across the whole country of what's being said on the leaflets. That website's been running for about 6 years, and we've got about 100,000 leaflets on it, so it's kind of pretty good picture, but we still haven't got anywhere close to 100% coverage of that 44% of all money that's being spent on them, all campaign expenditure. So you take the problem that we had with candidates and saying, wouldn't it be great if we could Google who can I vote for, and then that would be populated in Google. We solved that problem, we're really proud of that. But once you know who you can vote for, you kind of need to know where you can vote, like where your ballot paper's going to be. And it turns out that's about as broken as knowing where candidates are. If you're registered to vote, or if you register to vote, you don't get told where you should vote at that moment. I mean, that would kind of make sense. What happens is they send you a bit of paper that looks a bit like a kind of postcard that has a map and an address of your polling station. I nearly threw that away because I got a leaflet the same day in the same postal thing from the White Company, which is this white leaflet, right, the kind of bedlinen people. And the Royal Mail decided to fold my polling card into the middle of the White Company leaflet. And it was an identical size. So I picked this thing up and went to put it in the bin, and then my polling card fell out. And I was like, oh, wait, here's the thing that tells me how to vote. I'm glad I didn't throw that away. But how many people do? Like, is that a thing? How many people's dog eat their polling card? How many people put it on the fridge door and then go to work and then go, oh, I left it, I didn't really remember where to vote. I was going to do it on the way back from work, but I'm not going to bother anymore because I can't be able to go home and then go out again. So, like, you know. So maybe what we should do is make it so you can Google for where's my polling station. So we tried to do that. We sent an FOI to all councils. We got I don't know the percentage, but a load of councils just didn't reply, which if you care about FOI is a little bit scary. But for ones we did get, we only got about 15% of the data. So we built this tool. Because what we wanted to do is say, we're going to build the tool no matter what, and kind of backfill it. If we didn't have your polling station, we gave you a council's phone number, so at least you could phone them up. Here's the happy case, where's the result? You can say, there's your polling station, there's a nice map that shows your house and your polling station, and the council phone number, just in case you want to phone them up. We got like 4,500 people using it. Not very much, not very big numbers. But we didn't do any marketing, it wasn't very good, so you know it's kind of all right that somebody used it. But this was quite fun. The Guardian did a thing of what were the most Googled for terms on election day, and you can see we've got, who should vote for? We're not going to tackle that, there's lots of people are going to tell you that. Who are my local candidates? That was up, but you know, we solved that one. How do I vote? You know, that's kind of, I don't know if that's how should I vote or how do I do a process. But then these other ones are, you know, where do I vote? Where's my polling station? You can see there's a user need here to solve this problem. Whereas lots of the councils were saying, you know, they've got a polling card, they don't need to know this. They already know this. Nobody needs to know this on the internet. Okay, so this I've got like a minute now of what's next. We want to basically do the same for every election going forwards, at least. There's loads of other stuff you can do in between elections, and that's really important. But we think every election that happens in this country should have a list of candidates next to it. And hopefully you should have a tool that tells you where you can vote. That doesn't seem like it's a very big ask, but it's actually quite difficult to do. We spent a long time trying to solve those two things. We want to make the baseline better. These are all the elections that happen next year, all on the same day. Quite a lot of elections. It's basically like another general election, if you look at just how many things there are to vote on. we need help, we need money, we have no money. We did all of it this year with where we had some very kind support in some time and hosting from my society, but we had no actual funds to pay anyone, really. Developers, if you're a developer, come and talk to me. Candidates, can we work with political parties? Because they all know who's standing. Well, except sometimes they don't. I tried to phone up the Labour Party and say, do you have a list of people who are standing for election? They went, no. No, do you have a list of people who are not standing again for election? They went, no. And then eventually, like after several weeks of asking, they sent me a spreadsheet and we went through them and it was wrong. So this is like a national party who doesn't know who their candidates are. So, but you know, maybe we can help work with them. There's one data source for this. And polling station. How do we do that? There's loads of licensing things. I don't understand it. Like, please come and help us if you know about licensing. Address sector, Peter Wells. longer term, I probably run out of time, so there's lots of other stuff that we want to do in between elections, like making it possible to engage with your state when it isn't election day. Election day is the only day when you can say, how can I engage with my state? One easy step, and you can go and vote. We want to make that as easy to answer every single other day of the year. And you know, my society have fixed all of these problems, like fix my street, you can go and do a thing, but there's a huge amount of things that it's quite hard to engage with the state on. Even back to John Sheridan's talk, if you were there, like, what is the law on this thing? It's quite difficult to do that. And then the final thing on that is, who knows what the responsibility of their council is versus their parish council, versus their district council, versus an MP, versus an MEP, versus the UN. Like, nobody should have to understand those things in order to do the thing they want to do. They shouldn't have to do that. That's just my... we want to fix that. We can change that. We can build the GovUK that breaks down those barriers between governmental departments, but for the whole state. So that's all I've got.
Again, just a couple of minutes, a couple of questions. Again, we have loads of time in a largely unscheduled next session.
Thank you.
Hi. I wondered, with the referendum coming up on Europe, I think most people in the UK have presumed about the way Europe works, what we're talking about, the European government. So I wondered if you had any plans to put up some information about that.
Going back to the kind of baseline, can you all hear me if I just shout, is that right? Going back to the kind of baseline thing, we can't do candidates because it's just the kind of, we don't have all the questions yet, but yes, we hope to be able to do something about that. It's still a couple of years away, still don't really know what's going to happen with it, but there's a fine line between what should the press do, because I'm sure that the press and lots of other kind of groups, charities and stuff will be doing a lot of work around what the question actually means, but yeah, I'm sure there's something that we're going to be able to do with that. Just don't know what yet. But please, any ideas, email us or tweet us or whatever.
Are you chasing up the 85% of the FOIs that didn't respond?
So it turns out we didn't really think about this when we sent the emails to all the councils, but having a conversation with 450 councils simultaneously over email is quite difficult. So we didn't at first want to be really heavy-handed and just like refer them to Information Commissioner and all that kind of stuff. Oh, sorry, to be clear, 85% didn't give us data, but they replied. Some of those 85% replied. They even said no, they don't hold it, they still need to do it on paper. Or like, there's like loads of other, so there's loads of problems. But if you go in heavy-handed right now, we probably burn some bridges to kind of make it better. So we haven't done that yet, but we're going to be spending the next year or whatever. Oh, I've got it here. 327 days until the next election. Lobbying councils to get that data out in whatever form. FOI might not be the right tool.
All right, thank you very much, Sim. And now we will move on to the last speaker for the session, who is Dave Cross.
Hey, I'm going to talk about a project that I built on top of your next MP stuff. It's called Twit Election. And this has stopped working. Which is because my keyboard has stopped working. That's better.
So what I do is run through what it is, why it is, how it is, how I did it, what happened, and some vague thoughts about whether it was worth it or not. So what is it? So it's a website that looks like this. This wasn't a particularly useful thing, telling you how long it is till the next election. But what's more useful is you go into the constituency pages, and there's a Twitter widget here, which has all of the candidates on Twitter for your constituency. And over here we've got a little bit more information about the candidates and some that aren't currently on Twitter. And a link to your next MP to go and change the update the information. So there's a Twitter account. We use Twitter lists, one list per constituency. We've got a website with a page per constituency, and then some more general stats about what's going on. Why do it? Well, because I love elections. I'm an election geek. I have vague memories of either one or both of the 1974 elections. During the 1990s, I was one of those annoying people who goes up to you in the vote when you're coming out of voting, asking if they can have your voting number. Did that for at least two parties during the 90s. 2005, I spent the entire night working in the Guardian offices trying to make sure that their website was up to date with the results. I also love Twitter, because everyone does. This is me in 2010, speaking at a South London Geek Night, where I was talking about this website which I built, which tracked all of the candidates in my local constituency, not just on Twitter, but blogs and Flickr and YouTube and stuff like that. Now, that's easy enough to do for one constituency. For 650, it's a slightly different proposition. So, yeah, anyway, so why I did it, because elections and Twitter are awesome. Okay, so how did I do it? Well, the technology is actually pretty easy. I mean, I'm assuming there's quite a lot of geeks in the room, and you could knock up something that does this in an afternoon. The data is obviously the hard part. So the technology, Twitter lists and Twitter widgets, obviously. There were some recent changes that Twitter made that made it a lot easier. When I first started thinking about doing this, a Twitter user could only have 20 lists. And I was thinking, well, can I maybe do it by having 33 separate accounts and keeping the... But then they changed it, so you can have 1,000 lists, so that solved that problem. Also, they had the thing where if you created a widget, it was hard-coded to a particular list, so I would have to create 650 widgets. But just before I tried to do it, they changed it so that you could actually pass the list ID into the widget, which made that a lot easier. The code's written in Perl because that's the programming language of champions. In particular, there's a CPAN module called NetTwitter, which makes a lot of the Twitter stuff really, really easy. It was hosted on GitHub Pages, but most of it's a static site, so you can do that. And I was worried about overwhelming my own servers if I put it on my hosts. And we'll see why that was a ridiculous thing to be worried about a bit later on. A bit more about technology, Bootstrap, obviously, and some bit of JavaScript. As I said, the data's a much harder problem. You've got 650 constituencies. Each one has about 6 candidates standing on average. So that's about 4,000 candidates that you've got to try and track down the data for. And as Sim was just saying, there's no central data source, or there's no official central data source. So I sent out this tweet back in November, and Sam Smith, everyone knows Sam, right? Because Sam knows everybody. And he put me in touch with the Democracy Club. And they put me in touch with this, which is exactly what we've just been hearing about. And so you know what this is, but it's it tells you who the party is, and it's got the Twitter username, which was obviously vitally important, and an API. So use their API, a bit of JSON, a bit of basic data munging, the Twitter list API, and hence you have a website and 650 lists. Actually, I ended up with 700 or something. I'm not quite sure how that happened. Okay, so what happened? Well, basically, it worked, which was good. There were a few bugs that got ironed out quite quickly. In particular, somebody in this room, James, got in touch with me. He'd fallen off. It wasn't on purpose. But we fixed that pretty quickly.
What was the bug?
There was some database flaw that I had to fix. I learned a lot about Twitter error codes. These two I started. Now, Twitter, you might know, it throttles the amount of requests that you can make to the API. Now, there are two basic ways that you can deal with this. You can keep a note of how many requests you've made in a given time frame, and when you know that you've gone up to the limit, then stop. Or you can basically just keep going until you get one of these codes back, which means you've gone over the limit and you just stop at that point, which was the approach I took because it's easier. 108. Has anyone done any work with the Twitter API? Does anyone recognise 108? 108 means you're trying to add a non-existent user, which generally means that there's either a typo in the Twitter name, or someone's changed the Twitter name. Now, you can change your Twitter name and still talk, obviously take all of your followers. And people did this for various reasons. I mean, some of them were because there were MPs who had last looked at their Twitter account in 2005. And their Twitter account was something like Ed for 2005, so they or there's another thing that goes at some point. I think some of the parties sent out emails to people saying, now the Parliament is out of session, we don't have any MPs. So if you have an MP in your Twitter name, you are breaking the law. So a lot of people changed their Twitter names to drop MP. But of course, the Twitter names that your next MP had were out of date. So Sim had this list of the number of people, the top people who had sent updates to their data. I think I was probably just off the bottom of that list because I sent in a lot of things to fix this stuff. And then there's 106. 106 means that the user has blocked you. And so you can't add them to a list, which is kind of weird. If you've got a Twitter account of a parliamentary candidate, the first time this happened was a chap called Glenn Tingle, who's the UKIP PPC for Norwich North. And I asked some friends why he might have blocked me. And a friend of mine pointed out that perhaps he didn't want to draw attention to his following habits. So I looked at his following page. And there's only two here. He follows about 700 people. And about 15 of them were young ladies who didn't seem to like wearing clothes. So a few friends of mine, we had some conversations about this on Twitter. And then he no longer exists on Twitter. So I tweeted this the next day. I'm honestly not sure how I feel about that. Sometimes I think that's really good, but other times I think no, not so much. There was also another one, Tim Scott, also UKIP, that blocked me for some reason. And then I got another tweet from this chap's in Tooting, which is just south from me, and their UKIP candidate had protected their tweets. Now that means I can still add them to the list, but only people that are allowed to see their tweets see them when they look at that list, which is, again, quite a bizarre thing to want to do. Some people don't understand crowdsourcing. This is a candidate page, and down here it says, if you wish to make any corrections, please, and there's a pointer to the Your Next MP page. about half of the tweets that I got aimed at this Twitter account were people telling me that I'd got something wrong. Could I change one of the candidates? And I gently tried to point them at the correct way to change things. Some statistics. 72% of the PVCs were on Twitter in total. I think if you do that maths I was talking about earlier, 650 constituencies, about six candidates, that's actually 3,900. And your next MP ended up with 3,917 candidates, and 72% of them are on Twitter. If you look at the individual parties, UKIP, only half of their candidates were on Twitter. Presumably, I don't know, maybe more of them were, but they were just blocking everyone. The SNP were the only one of the major parties that got 100% coverage. So that's impressive by them. You know, Labour and the Conservatives were did pretty well. Was it worth it? So this is my Google analytics. This was the web it got posted to the UK politics subreddit. This goes from the day that the campaign started to, I think, 2 days after the election. And interestingly, there were more people looking the day after the election than there were actually on the day of the election. But I only had about 1,000 people over that period actually looking at the site, so it wasn't hugely successful. So we had a very small number of users, probably because I'm crap at marketing. But I should point out that that's just people that visited the website. I've got, obviously, one of the things that I did was I created these Twitter lists, and I've got no way of knowing how many people actually made use of those Twitter lists in some way. But people said nice things, so that's nice. What am I going to do now? Well, I'm going to make it configurable. Currently, it's all hard-coded to only work for that one particular election. So I want to make it configurable and then promote the code so that other people can use it. And there I am, promoting the code. So perhaps it can be reused in other elections, both UK-based and internationally. Because I kind of think that anywhere where you're using Twitter and you have something like your next MP, which is based on Poppet, then you should be able to use the code to do something similar. This is what a site currently looks like. We have 1,790 days to go till the next general election. Which is interesting, because of the vagaries of leap years, it's actually on exactly the same date as the last one. There you go. Yeah, so we'll see you all in 5 years. Thank you very much.